Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. June is National Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Awareness Month, and I've planned for some time to interview an expert to help you understand PTSD. But last week's mass shooting of elementary school students in Uvalde, Texas, shifted my focus. I wanted to talk with someone familiar with childhood trauma who could speak to what the survivors in Uvalde are going through. Cindy Thomas is a licensed professional counselor who has specialized in working with children for more than 20 years. She currently works for a local school district, and as you will hear, she has a keen understanding of how trauma affects children and how to help them. Here's my conversation with Cindy Thomas. Thank you so much for being with us today to help explain something that affects a lot of people.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So I think people have maybe kind of a popular idea of what post-traumatic stress disorder is, maybe based on how it's portrayed in TV. And also the word trauma seems to be thrown around a lot these days, sort of loosely. So could we just start with some definitions of what trauma is and what PTSD is?
Sure, absolutely. So in no particular order, you know, I think we're hearing so much about trauma because we know so much more about how it affects our body and how it affects development. Mm-hmm. And so we know that trauma is a risk factor for many mental health disorders. So, you know, it people who experience, for example, adverse childhood experiences, which might be neglect, any form of child abuse, whether it's physical, sexual, or emotional, or you're growing up in poverty, or those kinds of things. Those experiences, for example, if you have four or more, it increases your chances of having heart disease and cancer by like four times. Mm. And if you have four or more, it increases your chances of committing suicide by 12 times. So these trauma affects or it increases our chances of having some type of diagnosed mental health problem. So post-traumatic stress disorder occurs when someone has an exposure to actual or threatened death. So if they witness someone dying, or if they think that they are going to die, or they have a serious injury or some type of violent sex assault, mm-hmm, upon them, then they can also develop post-traumatic stress disorder. So it doesn't mean that if one of those things happens that automatically I'm going to develop post-traumatic stress disorder, but it can happen.
And what form does it take? What are the signs and symptoms? What happens to someone with PTSD?
There are avoidance symptoms. So when someone develops post-traumatic stress disorder, they have the memories of that event are very distressing. And so they will try to do a lot of things to avoid things that would trigger those memories. Mm. They can have very distressing dreams or flashbacks. I think when we started to first learn about post-traumatic stress disorder, it was associated with combat veterans. And so like loud noises, for example, would be something that they would respond or react to. But say if I imagine the children in the school shooting in Texas, mm-hmm, would be very distressed going by their school or entering a classroom next school year. So that might be very triggering to them, you know, when they have those experiences. But basically, when someone some of the things that are visible that you can see, or behaviors that you can notice in someone, would be a person who can be very irritable and have angry outbursts, you know, very like out of proportion to the situation. Mm-hmm. A person can be very hypervigilant, like kind of stuck in that fight or flight state. They might have an exaggerated startle response. Because if you think about it, if you're walking around that very high arousal state, and you might jump more frequently than somebody who's not experiencing that same situation. And then we see lots of problems with concentration and ability to focus, and then, you know, difficulty falling asleep and staying asleep. And that's what we see with children and adults. I think the main difference between adults and children is that in adults, we might see more substance abuse occurring and more reckless types of behavior happening.
So do you think people are more aware of PTSD than they used to be? It sure seems like it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the mental illness in general, I think that we have more of an awareness about. We hear it on the news so much. We point to it a lot. And I think that we're doing a lot to educate our communities about mental illness. So I think that we do have a better understanding.
But I think a lot of people, as you were saying before, still associate PTSD with combat only. Is that right?
We used to say shell-shocked when we talked about combat veterans. Right, and I think, you know, our diagnostic and statistical manual of mental health disorders says that PTSD, you know, when you experience PTSD, you actually had to have, your life had to be threatened, or, you know, it had to be some life or death situation. And it's people can develop post-traumatic stress disorder with something that their life may or may not have been actually threatened. There may be a car accident, mm-hmm. a dog attack, you know, something like that, a medical trauma. So there's a wide range of things that can cause post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think that's the thing that people may not entirely understand. And I think, you know, one of the symptoms I mentioned was being easily distracted and difficulty focusing. Mm-hmm. Well, in schools, that's also, when you have kids in school, that's also a symptom of ADHD. Right. And that's often where people want to jump. It's like, oh, this child has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder because they're not focusing on their schoolwork. And, and they may or may not know that this trauma that happened, whatever it may have been, is actually the thing that's dealing with that's causing their distractibility. So, you know, and if it's affecting their sleep, then that's just increasing that problem. So there's a lot of pieces to it. And what is really needed is, while we might know more about mental health and more about post-traumatic stress disorders, I don't think that people know where to go for help, or when it's time to go for help, if that makes sense.
Are there any misconceptions about PTSD?
I don't know. I don't know if there's misconceptions, but you could see where it would be really easy to misdiagnose it, like, for example, something happens to a child. A child is sexually abused, and their abuser tells them, "You tell anybody about this that this happened, and I'm going to kill your family." So the child's walking around, having had that happen to them, and telling no one. Mm-hmm. And then these behaviors start to emerge, and parents don't know, and they don't know what it is, or, you know, necessarily what to do about it. That's, you know, it's mental health disorders don't present like other illnesses do. It's not something you can always see.
Right. So it's up to professionals like you to maybe dig a little deeper, look a little closer.
Right. And one thing that we're doing that's really great is Governor Abbott mandated that all educators be trained in a suicide prevention course. Hmm. And one of those is youth mental health first aid. And I'm actually an instructor for that. And that's something I've trained a lot of educators in that course. And what it does is it just teaches them the signs and symptoms of mental health disorders. And that can be available to anyone. It can be done in churches that parents could potentially attend a training, but it's a really good way to learn about the signs and symptoms of mental health disorder and what is the difference between typical adolescent behavior and development versus what behaviors rise to the level of a mental illness.
Right. What's the treatment protocol for PTSD? How do you help people?
Well, there's no one size fits all, right?
Yeah.
So there's lots of different modalities. I'm most familiar with trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. There's another, and that is good for children aged 3 to 17. And in that particular modality, we teach children relaxation exercises while exposing them to the event that occurred that caused their trauma, to eventually getting them to give us a narrative of what happened, mm-hmm. while using those coping strategies so they can talk about their trauma without it being distressing.
Yeah.
There's another one that is really popular right now called EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy.
I've heard about this. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So it's, so you're getting the client to focus on their trauma memories while simultaneously, typically eye movements, experiencing bilateral stimulation. I'm not trained in this particular one, but it's very popular. It's good for children and adults. And so I think the best way to help someone is a holistic approach. So there's several different types of therapies that that one could experience, but then also I'm very much a fan of there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score.
Yeah, I heard that author interviewed. Yeah.
Bessel van der Kolk. Sorry.
Yeah.
And so he combines various forms of trauma therapy with play therapy and yoga. You know, if you think about yoga, you learn to regulate your breathing. You're really mm-hmm. focused on your breathing. You're really focused on, being in the present, and your muscles, and then relaxing them. And so your body is, it's helping your body to calm down,
right,
basically. And so if you think about someone in a constant fight or flight place, then that would be really helpful.
Yeah. So you've mentioned it a couple of times. We're recording this just a week after the horrible shooting in Uvalde.
Right.
That had to hit home for you, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually years ago worked in a school there was not a mass shooting in the school, but there was a mass shooting in the community.
Mm.
And three high school students were killed in the school where I worked. Yeah. And I remember that. And there was, I didn't sleep for 2 weeks. We organized all of the counseling, triage in the school. And, it was very intense. Mm-hmm. And, I wasn't a part of that community, but it was a very much, vicarious trauma is a thing.
Right.
So it's like you have this in Uvalde, you have the survivors, the people who were there. If you think about the children in the classroom,
yeah,
who survived this and witnessed all of that horrificness.
Yeah.
And then you have fellow teachers. And then you have the first responders. And I read yesterday the justice of the peace, who also served as the coroner in this shooting, had the task of having to identify.
Oh, my God.
And he said, I was really glad to read. He said he knew he was going to need help. He mm-hmm. knew that there was going to come a time where he was going to need to deal with that, and going to need professional help to deal with it. And I thought that's really good insight and really good, that he's already thinking that way.
Yeah.
So I really feel for that community, and really just, and one thing I've been hearing is the resources there are limited.
Right.
So I really feel, you know, just it is very heart-wrenching to think about the how this affects generations to come there.
I wanted to ask you about that. I've heard this term generational trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does that work?
Okay. So if you're a parent and you are walking around with undiagnosed trauma that you've not had any treatment for, not worked on or dealt with, which, you know, being a Gen Xer, you know, when I was a kid, we were latchkey kids and we didn't talk about, you know, any of this stuff. And,
I'm right with you. I know. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I was, you know, my kids are so well versed in having a mom as a therapist, and, they're so very well versed in terminology and all the things. And, so anyway, you're a parent and you've got this, you know, trauma you haven't dealt with, and you're walking around hypervigilant in this constant state of fight or flight, and your reactions to things and how you approach things and how you respond to things. I mean, who's picking that up?
Right.
Your kids are. And so they, you know, and add to that, just kind of how we, as, you know, how differently, we raise our children today versus, you know, 30, 40 years ago, their anxiety level is increased. Mm-hmm. You know, they're dealing with so much more than we had to deal with. And I'm getting away from the generational term, but if you think about social media, and, you know, some of the expectations that are put on them versus when we were kids, mm-hmm. and at a pandemic that isolated them for a year, you know, it's very, I'm seeing it with my three that it's really affected them in a very negative way.
Yeah. So what are these kids in Uvalde in for? What are they going to need going forward?
Gosh, they're going to need a lot of support. You know, one thing that, I said earlier, because I can't imagine that the kids who experienced were inside the classroom are not going to develop post-traumatic stress disorder. I can't imagine that not happening. But what we know, and as I said earlier, just because you experience something doesn't necessarily mean that you will. Mm-hmm. And this community will be resilient. But this is so massive. I think that they need some resources, some mental health resources in that town to help everyone, you know, because they were so tight knit. It was a small place. Everybody knew everybody, and they're going to need some serious resources to manage that
over a long term, I'm sure.
I would think so. You know, a lot of clients I've worked with, you know, for example, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy is something that can be completed in 12 to 15 sessions. So it's not like you're in therapy for years and years and years.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But like, if I'm one of these kiddos and I'm 10 now, and, you know, in a few months I go to therapy for a few months and I'm like doing okay. When I'm 14 or 15, I might have some different symptoms that emerge. I might have to go back and look at this again. You know, as they're growing and developing, there's going to be some things that they're going to have to address at different ages of their development because they're so young, you know?
Yeah. That makes sense.
And, you know, and as I said earlier, they're going to need mental health resources and substance abuse resources. So, right. Because if you think you're experiencing PTSD and, you know, you see an increase in chances of substance abuse with individuals who have trauma.
People just self-medicate,
exactly. You know, masking those emotions, whatever. But that's and how that works against you, because when you drink, especially to excess, it actually depletes your brain of serotonin, which is your happy neurotransmitter, and other neurotransmitter depletes all of those and throws in a lot of adrenaline. Mm. And so you're compounding that that anxiety. And so I don't know exactly what their situation is, but
that'll be something to watch.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I'm sure you hope and pray this never happens at a school you're working at. Have you done any specific training about this? I mean, you mentioned mental health first aid, but, do you feel like you would be ready? And that's kind of a tough question.
I don't think anybody could ever be prepared.
Right. Yeah.
For something. I mean, and I've had, and this is so sad, but I've had active shooter drill training, you know, mm-hmm. our kids are having those trainings in school, you know, and when you're, even though I'm a therapist, if I'm in a school and that happens, I'm part of that crisis. I'm going to be of no help. So it's like, you know.
Yeah, that's one thing that occurred to me. I mean, in that situation, you would need your own help.
Exactly. And so I pray to God, you know, that it doesn't happen. And we really have to figure out what to do. And I did, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, or have been thinking about as I've watched the news through all this, and you know, just hearing about this town and the lack of resources there, and that the shooter had, quote, no known mental illness. And they started to jump on his mental health. Mm-hmm. That's very frustrating to me, because individuals with mental illnesses are more likely to be the victims mm-hmm. of violent crimes than they are to be the perpetrators. Now, I'm not saying he didn't have something wrong, some mental health problem. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But it increases the stigma anytime there's a violent act and we start to jump on, oh, that's a mental health problem, because there's already a whole lot of shame that people have in coming forward to get help. And when we increase the stigma of mental illness, that's not helping that problem. We need to be doing everything we can to decrease that stigma and make it okay for people to reach out for help.
Well, that's where I wanted to end. Let's talk about what hope is out there, what resources and solutions are available here in Texarkana and elsewhere.
Community Health Corps is your local mental health authority. Mm-hmm. And their job, in addition to having programs like outpatient therapy for kids and adults, their job is to provide community education. So, you know, if they accept a lot of different insurances, but if they don't accept yours, they'll help you. They'll refer you to someone who does. They will help you find the resources that you need. Okay. And so that is a really good place to start. I, off the top of my head, I know Genesis Prime Care has a great counseling department. And you can go online and Google therapist in Texarkana and find a whole list of people. But, you know, off the top of my head again, the intake number for Community Health Corps is 1-800-4-INTAKE.
Okay.
And they have a 24/7 crisis number as well, which is 800-832-1009.
Well, thanks so much for taking all the time to explain all this to us. It's hard to think about some of this stuff, but I'm glad there are people out there like you who are willing and able to help.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Great. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Take care.
All right.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. The show was written, produced, and edited by Carl Richter. News stories are based on Gazette staff reports. Texarkana Gazette podcasts are made possible in part by a grant from the Google News Initiative Journalism Emergency Relief Fund. I'll see you next week on The Line.